Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everybody. I apologize for that little pause there. Welcome to Dr. Jones's Conservative Report. Dr. Jones is on vacation. I am Cool Mike, and I've been filling in for the past week. He'll be back Monday. I think he's on a cruise ship in the Caribbean somewhere, so don't hold me to that. I'm really excited about tonight's show. We have, for the first hour, executive member for the Michigan Fair Tax, John Crawford, who is the lead horse in the spirit for the Michigan Fair Tax, not the flat tax, the fair tax. But this is an entire new way of thinking, a new philosophy, a new add to the Constitution of the state. John was at a local luncheon yesterday. I was able to attend and listen to him. I became really excited about having him as a guest. John's also open to comments and questions. He took them yesterday at the luncheon. And if you are in favor of the current tax or maybe the flat tax, et cetera, feel free to call and ask him why you think, why would the fair tax be better? Don't hesitate to. Welcome all of our chatters. I see we got a lot of our college chatters, our college friends in the chat room. Definitely glad to have you there. Hope you're not raising too much craziness over at the Morningstar. Then again, go right ahead. And keep in mind, the fair tax is also a nationally federal idea as well. However, John is here speaking on behalf of what would be the state of Michigan. And also, a lot of people of you who are listening are from different states. Look it up online. See if your state has an idea. It is just a great philosophy, and I'm really, really excited to bring John in for the first hour. Getting to the second half of our show, well, we've got money to burn now, don't we? Billions missing? No. Trillions missing. It's really, really funny. We have 345 elected Congress people along with 100 or more senators and just thousands of employees, and nobody can track any of this cash where it's all gone. Nobody has any clue where it's disappeared to. Well, in the second half, we're going to break it down. I've invited some other BTR guests here. Hopefully they'll show. If not, I'm going to play recordings. It is almost amazing that some of these people who are in high, very high positions, of amazing, authoritative, powerful positions, how when they are questioned by individuals on where's the money, have no clue where it's at. There's a famous saying, follow the money. Yeah. Anyway, we're going to jump into the song and jump right back into start the show. Let's see. No announcements before, so right when we get back in, we'll jump right in right after the station break. Stay tuned.
Time with the wheels, yeah.
out of that song a little quicker, but that's because I see John on the air. John, can you hear me okay?
Hey, Michael, yep.
It sounds great to have you, John. Thanks for being a guest. Anyone else listening, I see we have some guests in the chat room. Feel free to call in if you're with John as far as to ask questions. I find that a lot of people who are involved in this with the Michigan Fair Tax have already they've had their doubts, and their doubts have been answered, and they've had their questions, and their questions have been answered. So for a lot of them, if they call in, feel free to ask John a question, even though you're part of the program, because what you may do is enlighten us on some of the issues that other people are bringing. And, John, I thought you did a great job yesterday at the luncheon. I know my brother and I are on the way home. We rarely ever agree on anything in politics. We rarely agree on the weather, too. But this was really a great thing. Why don't you take a couple minutes, introduce yourself, tell people who you are, about the Michigan Fair Tax, and do your little spiel here. This will give me a chance to run and go grab a pop real quick and come right back.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Yep. And as Mike was saying there, I'm John Crawford. I'm serving as a volunteer executive director of the Michigan Fair Tax Association. The group is entirely a grassroots organization, and we've got fair tax volunteers in all 83 counties of the state. Somewhere, I'm not exactly sure where it is, the database is around 12, 13, 14,000 people statewide that are, working on spreading the news about what the Michigan Fair Tax Replacement Plan will mean for the great state of Michigan. And the reasons that we're doing it largely are to get the economy turned back around, to kind of free up the free market system, to get it back to work so that we can begin to, fill in the holes that have been dug by a lot of different things over the years, and give Michigan families what it is that we really want, really need most, and that's not just jobs, but it's jobs to choose from. So I born and raised in the Grand Rapids, Michigan area. I'm currently living over in Allendale, married to my wife, Joan, who's a registered nurse. And she's a very conservative person, but a little bit not politically involved, or at least not to the level that I am. But a couple years ago, she asked me a question I couldn't answer, and she goes, really, seriously, she says, I can't tell. Can you tell me what the difference is between our government and the mafia? And I was kind of stumped on that, but it's one of those things that motivates me to, continue to work on this fair tax along with hundreds of other volunteers statewide. And that is, this does represent probably the biggest transfer of liberty from the government to the people, not only the state but of the nation, literally since the Constitution was adopted 230 years ago. So anyway, we can kind of get into that.
Okay.
And go ahead, Michael.
I was going to say, now this replaces the current state income tax, correct?
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. So for most people, and I kind of want to keep it on layperson terms. I don't mean to insult anyone, but it is something very, very new. So we're going to kind of keep it A, B, and C. And that's one of the great things about John is when you were speaking to when he took questions, he was explaining to it in very simple terms. And I think that is a good vibe. I mean, when you relate to things that people can relate to, sometimes some of these people are a bunch of stuffed shirts. They stand up in front of people and they use words to words. You may even have an intelligent audience, but they're staring at you like, what the hell did this guy say? So what this means is when you get your paycheck, your income tax right now, just for the state, not federal, not city, but for the state alone, will be zero if this is passed. Okay, my first question posed to you, John, is how does the Michigan fair tax, how would this take place in Michigan? What do we as citizens have to do in order to get it into law?
What we are doing with this in Michigan is we're making this a constitutional amendment. The only way that Michigan's constitution can be changed is by a vote of the majority of the voters of Michigan. The legislature cannot vote to amend the constitution, and there's a bunch of reasons why we're doing that, but it's to protect the tax code, it's to protect the changes, because if we did the easier thing, and that was just to get some bills passed through the legislature, they could pass, but in a year and a half or 2 years, the next legislature that comes along could just unpass them and just reverse course or add to them or raise rates and so on and so forth. And so we're putting this thing into the Michigan Constitution. Now, with the voters, that's the only way that the Constitution can be amended. There are two ways that the issue can get in front of the voters. I don't know if it's easier or whatever. The simpler way is that the state legislature, a supermajority in the House and the Senate, which is two-thirds of the House, that would be 74 out of 110 representatives, and two-thirds of the Senate, which is 26 or 27 out of 38 senators. So about 110 legislators, two-thirds of the House plus two-thirds of the Senate, can vote to put it on the ballot. It bypasses the governor. The governor doesn't sign that. Just two-thirds of the House plus two-thirds of the Senate puts it on the ballot. The second way, which is harder and arguably much more expensive, is a referendum. And in Michigan, you're required to have 10% of the total number of people who voted for governor in the last election. And that was close to about 4 million people. So we'd have to collect 400,000 signatures, which on one level doesn't sound like a lot until you get out there and do it. And that's really a lot of signatures, and that's a very expensive proposition. But those are the two ways that the ballot measure can get in front of the voters. You can go either route, but again, the voters would amend the Constitution. So at this point, we're trying to just inform people and just encouraging everybody to pick up the phone, call their state representative and their state senator and say, you know what, we really just give us the right to vote. Just let us vote on it. That's kind of the main thing for the day, I guess.
So, in other words, let's start at the very, very beginning. Right now, for those who are not familiar with the fair tax, it is you want to let everyone know the website?
Sure. You can get a ton of information, all kinds of documentation. We've got a really good FAQ on there. We've been working to keep that thing updated. We're going through the answers and the white papers that are there to simplify those so they're a little easier to read. But so there's some high-level reading and low-level reading there. But the website is mifairtax.org. And so there's just a lot of really good information there as well.
And those of you who are listening, who are on, look it up right now. Take a look at it. Feel free to call in or post your questions for John. My next question, John, is at this stage, if for those who are listening and they are convinced after the hour that I like this idea and they do their own individual researching, their first step should be to call their state representative, state senator, or both.
Sure. Oh. And matter of fact, if they'd like to even roll their sleeves up and get involved, you can also sign up. I would, at minimum, get on the Michigan Fair Tax email list. We just have a ton of information that's going out all over the state all the time. We've got events going on probably four or five times a week someplace in the state, and we can get that information right to you based on where you live. We've got ways to, for you to identify who your senator is and who your state rep is with their phone number and address and all that kind of stuff. So I would go to the mifairtax.org website and register and get on the email list. And then also, if you'd like to volunteer to do something, there's a spot also on that website where you can just say, yeah, I'd like to do something, and then somebody will get in touch with you. We'll give you a call and get you connected with somebody and get you working on this thing.
Okay, you actually, John, you actually have a question in the chat room. I don't know if you're looking, but I think that Lindsay is asking, as a college student, can she apply for what would be the actual refund per month, or would that go to if she can be claimed by a dependent?
Sure. Well, that's a great question. Yeah, that's a great question. It goes by head of household. Now, if you happen to be living in a dormitory, say over at Aquinas College or Calvin College or U of M or MSU, go green, you could sign on. You register yourself. It'd just be something like, you know, between you and your parents. But you can only be registered once. You can only be declared one place at one time. So if you are away at college, as a matter of fact, it probably would be to your advantage to do that. In that way, you'll wind up receiving a prebate payment. So each household receives that payment. And what the payment is, and we call it a prebate because it's a refund or a rebate of all of the sales taxes every household pays for all of their basic necessity purchases. We just give you the cash back. Probably put it on a debit card or whatever. And that's based only on the number of legal residents living at your address, where you're the head of the household. The way the system would work is you just log on to a secure web server, and then the head of the household is going to list the number of people living in the household at that address with the name, birth date, and Social Security number, and then they would be good to go for the next 12 months. So if your parents registered you, and let's say they've got four kids, or two kids plus two of them, so there's four people in the house, but you also happen to be in the dorm over at, say, Calvin College, if they put your name and Social Security number on their address, they're going to wind up receiving a four-person refund check every month, a refund debit card payment. And then when you go to try to register for your household, which happens to be your dorm room of you, a household of one, the computer would kick you out and say, oh, you're already declared someplace else. So you can only be listed at one place at one time. But that would be between you and your parents, so you could actually sign yourself up. I do believe you have to be 18 or older, and you have to be a legal resident. You have to be in the country legally. So illegal immigrants are the only people that are not allowed to get a refund.
Okay. Also, John, you got another question going on. A person, actually, the person who owns the cafe in Easttown has posted, every time there's a new tax system, they get zapped. As a small business person, why should I support the fair tax?
Small business people are going to love the fair tax because it's a tax replacement system. And one of the things that we do through the Michigan Fair Tax and also the National Fair Tax is we are replacing all business entity taxes. The reason is that those taxes, which are significant, hide the cost of our government. They hide those costs in the prices of everything that we buy. And a business entity, in reality, does not pay taxes. Alan Greenspan was a former chairman of the Federal Reserve System. He was testifying before Congress. And one of the guys asked him a question, and he said, his answer was, quote, "Honestly, Senator, business entities do not pay taxes. People pay taxes." And he's absolutely correct. A business entity is an inanimate thing. It's an LLC. It is a corporation. It exists only to create a profit for its owners, and it does so by delivering a superior service or product, and in the process of doing it, it employs people. But it itself does not pay the tax. We pay the tax in the form of higher prices. We pay those taxes in the form of lower wages, or we pay the taxes in the form of lower dividends that go to the owners. So what the fair tax does is it wipes out all the business taxes in the state. So that makes Michigan a very, very, very competitive, the most competitive state in the United States, probably the most competitive place on the planet for someone to invest in their business, to expand their business. There's no capital gains tax. That goes away. There's no corporate income tax, no Michigan business tax. There's no 22% surcharge. All of your business, state-imposed business personal property taxes. Again, personal property is all the stuff that's inside of a business building. If you could take that building, flip it upside down, and shake it, everything that falls out of it is, by definition, personal property. And most people don't know that a business is forced to pay real estate taxes on all of the stuff. The reason they don't know that is because we don't have to pay taxes on all of our stuff in our houses. We only pay real estate tax either through our rent in our apartment or through our house on our house payment on the house that we own. But a business owner has to pay that, the real estate tax on the real estate building, plus they've got to pay the same real estate taxes on all the stuff that's inside the building. And so we wipe that out as well. And so the reason, again, that we're doing that is to make the cost of our government visible. Like yesterday, I used the example going into McDonald's, and you put a $10 bill down to buy your quarter pounder with cheese, large fries, shake, whatever you get for 10 bucks, and they say that'll be $10.60. So you plunk another 60 cents up there, think, well, I've done my duty here and paid my sales tax of 60 cents at 6% sales tax, and you think that's all the taxes there are. But the reality is that that $10 bill doesn't cover just the cost of the meat and the bun and the cheeseburger and the pickles and relish and the french fries. You're also paying close to probably $2.40 in federal taxes. You're probably paying close to $1, $1.05 in state taxes, and maybe another 30, 40, 50 cents in local property taxes. So you have probably another $3 or $4 almost of taxes that you are paying, but you can't see them because they're buried in the cost of the cheeseburger. And so what we do with the Michigan Fair Tax, we take at least the state tax. That's the only thing this deals with, is the state of Michigan taxes. And we just remove them from the cost of doing business. So business owners will like it. It'll be a lot easier for you to invest in your business. You can, you know, get you know, dividends, any bonuses or whatever come out of the business tax-free. And so literally what we're saying with the Fair Tax, we're saying, okay, we, the taxpayers, are going to give you, state government, all of the revenue that you needed to operate last fiscal year. Except that instead of taxing ourselves at the point where we all earn our money, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to tax ourselves at the point where we spend our money. And so we're going to use the existing Michigan sales tax system, modify it a little bit, and we'll get into that in a few minutes here as to what that is. We're going to use the sales tax system to replace six other taxes in the state of Michigan.
Well said. Guys, slow down with these questions. John, you're getting, man, I may keep you here till midnight. I'm getting all kinds of questions. Also, joining us on the line is Annie. Annie has a show from South Carolina, John, called Southern Sense. She last week had the person who would be in your chair in South Carolina with the South Carolina Fair Tax, which motivated me to make contact with you. Annie, welcome to the show.
Well, good afternoon. I'm glad I made you a convert. Well, and you know what, Annie, this is a guy from my high school, so you know me. If it's a Catholic Central man, I'm happy. I got to jump right into the very next question, John, because here's someone who asked. I'm kind of familiar with this. You may have touched on this yesterday, but this individual, her name is Tabitha, said her aunt owns a business which helps people with legal information. And says she gets taxed up the ass, and big law firms somehow in the state get a pass from paying single business tax or SBT. Does this make everything a level playing field? I hope I said that correctly. But I think what she's saying is her aunt's company didn't get exempt from something.
Tabitha, you are correct, but you do have a little bit of dated information. In October of 2007, and the thing actually took effect on December 1st, and the legislature repealed it on December the 8th. So it only stayed in effect, well, actually, it wasn't even that. It was just a few hours. And that was crazy what they did. What they did was they added a service tax. They added sales tax in Michigan. In Michigan, we have a sales tax on new goods and used goods sold at retail currently today. But we don't have sales tax on groceries. We don't have sales tax on prescriptions. And we don't have sales tax on consumer services. So what they did back in 2007, the governor was trying to, she had this increasing budget and was looking for more money, and so they passed a service tax. And in that service tax, there are 53 industries that got themselves exempted from the service tax. And you read down the list of the 53 industries, and all 53 have an association office in downtown Lansing within 3 or 4 blocks of the state capitol building, and that's why they were exempted. Now, if your aunt is doing a paralegal service, she could be producing a will. She could be working on a real estate closing for somebody or a contract like that, produce the identical work, and under that 2007 hodgepodge travesty of what happened, and this really got everybody in Michigan upset and mad at state government because they did this, paralegal firms were included in the service tax. So they'd produce the document and have to charge 6% service tax. And a law firm could produce the identical documents, but they exempted themselves. Same with CPA firms. CPA firms producing tax returns were not taxed, but bookkeepers who were not CPAs could produce the same tax return, and they would have to charge a service tax. You could own a ski resort. Downhill skiing is big in Michigan. And in the wintertime, the downhill ski resort operators had to charge a service tax, but if you own a golf course, the golf course operators did not have to charge a service tax. That all got repealed. That was only in effect for a few days. But, yes, this thing does greatly, tremendously level the playing field. It gets the government totally out of picking winners and losers. And our government... I say that our tax system is a carpet of pain, and Michigan's carpet of pain is the deepest in the Great Lakes region for business entities. And in order to compete at all, businesses have to go and ask for abatements. That's a temporary partial deduction of their taxes. And they have to go petition the government, they have to petition the city hall. City hall has to go back to the state. Everybody's got to approve it. And then you'll get an abatement for 1 year or 2 years or 3 years, up to 12. And the maximum they can give you off is a maximum of 75% of the tax cost. They could go 1% or 2% or 3% all the way up to 75. And those are the combinations. And then businesses are going, it's the only way we can compete. And this, by eliminating all business entity taxes in the state, eliminates the need for any abatements. And when you don't have any abatements anymore, all the lobbying goes out the window. You don't have any reason for probably half of the lobbying that goes on in Lansing. And if you've ever been down there, the House Office Building is about a 10-year-old building. It's about a 12, 13-story building, kitty corner from the Capitol Building. And it's just you can't get on the elevator. I've gone into all kinds of state reps' offices, in and out of the offices, and I'm sitting there pleading my case, and there's a lineup of these guys They're all wearing a suit and tie and carry a little briefcase with them. Every one of those guys is in there offering something. And this really does, it just takes all that away as far as the revenue for the state goes. It just takes the legislature out of the tax-setting business completely.
Which is great. Annie, do you have a comment? I'm going to bypass my next question since I have so many coming here at the computer. So, Annie, did you have a comment you wanted to make for John and have him respond?
No, John's spot on. But what I find is what is dynamic is that people kind of mix up the flat tax with the fair tax and with the VAT tax, I'm sorry.
Yes.
And
yes, yes.
I had a friend of mine that was he sent me a Fritz Holland article that was in the Sunday Times on Sunday Times, yes, obviously this Sunday. But Fritz Holland was a Democrat out of South Carolina, and he was supporting the Dick Armey VAT and flat tax. And I'm trying to explain to him there's a huge difference between a flat tax. A flat tax is still an income tax. It does not remove the IRS. It does not remove special interest. It doesn't take away the bureaucracy, and it doesn't even stop special interest from getting their hands into their tax exemptions. But the difference is with a fair tax that you take away any income tax, you take away any deductions that you have in your paycheck. If you earn $2,000 a month, you walk home with $2,000 in your pocket. Currently, what you're doing is you're spending, you've got 4 weeks in a month, and you've got $2,000. So that means you walk away with $500 less per month. Every single month, you're paying $500 in taxes, Social Security, unemployment, blah, 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 whatever the deductions are, they're gone. You're actually walking home with an extra paycheck per month. Now, with the Dick Armey plan with the flat tax, when you walk home with your $2,000, and they make you think like you're walking home with $2,000, you're not paying tax on that. Dick Armey's plan has you sitting home at the end of the month calculating what your tax is and physically writing a check to Uncle Sam and the IRS. Now, if you don't make that payment, the IRS is going to come after you. But under the fair tax, there's no IRS. There's no income tax. There's no deductions. The $2,000 you have in your pocket, you're walking home with. When you go into the store to buy a DVD player and it says $110 on it, the tax is already included in that final price. You're not paying a penny more. You're walking out of that store with $110. That's it. If you've got $110 and one penny, you still have that penny in your pocket. And that is what I love about the fair tax. There's nothing there. There's nothing up the sleeves. There's nothing hiding around there. It's a good, even, fair tax. If you don't need that DVD player, but someone that's got $2 million sitting in the bank, and he says, well, I want state-of-the-art. No, I don't want a $200 or $110 DVD. I want a $2,000 one. He's paying the tax on that $2,000 top of the line. But heck, you're not, because you didn't decide to buy it, and you're only paying tax on what you choose to buy.
Bullseye. That's great.
Jeff, you want to comment on
in Michigan, I've had a lot of people in Michigan say, well, we got to go to the fair tax. We got to go to the fair tax. And I said, well, okay, let me just slow you up here just a second. State of Michigan has had a – I'm sorry, we got to go to the flat tax. The state of Michigan has had a flat tax since 1967. We have a flat income tax in Michigan. We still got to go through all the gyrations, just like Andy described, of all the definitions of what income is and what income isn't, and is this a dividend, is this a gift, is this, you know, whatever, all the deductions. We have to go through 70,354 pages of IRS tax code to compute the federal tax. Then, once you get that number, then we come into the Michigan tax code. You have to take the numbers out of your federal return, plug them into your Michigan return. You start that process in the Michigan return. And then when you get all done with all that, the difference is a flat tax simply charges all taxpayers the same tax rate on their income. And as Annie pointed out, what fair taxes do, fair taxes replace all of that. In Michigan, the flat tax today that we have is 4.35% of your income. Doesn't matter if you're rich, small, big, fat, tall, whatever, big family, little family, the income tax in the state of Michigan is a flat tax of 4.35%. And then I just turn around and ask people, okay, since Michigan has already had a flat tax since 1967, okay, Michiganders, how's that working out for us so far? And everybody's eyes roll up in the back of their head, go, it isn't. Exactly. So we don't want to go to a flat tax. We already have a flat tax. And you certainly don't want a flat tax on the national level. So
no,
Annie, you speaketh the truth.
Well, John, there's something that people don't understand. If you have a flat tax and you have, for example, someone that's well off, they're earning $100,000 a year, and you're asking them to pay 4.35%, and you make the mathematics, all right, fine, that's $4,350. Now, a person earning $100,000 is writing out a check for whatever
right.
the 10% is. It's not as easy for him to write that check if someone has, say, for example, $1 million. So you have a flat tax, but it's not a fair tax, because when you turn around and you look at what someone that has only $50,000 or $100,000 in income, they can't afford to write that check, where someone that has $1 million that can bear a larger tax burden, it's not paying. It doesn't hurt them as much as it hurts someone in a lower income bracket. And then they turn around and go, oh, wait a minute, flat tax will give you a break. We'll take off, say, $20,000. That's diddly squat. You're still writing a huge check. And if you've got a family, say, of four kids, and you've got a business that's going on, and you've got a house with a huge mortgage, and when you start at the top of it and you're saying you got $100,000 in income, when you come down to the bottom line, you don't have that money to pay the tax. And the flat tax is asking you to pay a check every single month. Now, what do you do? Do you pay your mortgage, your electric bill, your phone bill? Do you pay for your kids' lunches and their clothing and their school bills? Or do you turn around and write a check to the IRS? Well, guess what? There's two things that are going out the window when you end up with a flat tax and you have to pay that check every month. It's going to be your life insurance, and it's going to be paying Uncle Sam. All right, I don't have the money, come after me. What are you going to do? And next thing you know, the IRS is knocking on your door, taking your house, your car, and everything else. Well, you could probably say, take my wife, you know, but they're going to say she's not worth it. Anyway, I still say the fair tax is better than the flat tax.
Yeah, Annie, work on that cord of yours. It's skipping a little bit. You know, John, you should have been on Annie's show this afternoon. It was a regular barroom brawl. It made me think of Gunsmoke. With Annie being what's her name, the lady who ran the Long Branch, shooting the gun in the air, telling everyone shut
Miss
up
Kitty?
And sit down. Yeah, Miss Kitty.
Miss Kitty.
When fires off that double barrel shotgun, everyone stops and she's like, sit up and shut up. One of the reasons we in Michigan must move on it, you see Annie's passion for this. Well, so too is it her guests who are from South Carolina. And this leads into the next question, why we must move on it fast. Your next question, John, is where would this put us as far as states competing in the USA with other states for business, new businesses coming to Michigan? I think I read that. I'm sorry. It was kind of blurry. But basically, where would it put us in there? And I'm thinking we need to compete fast because basically the first states that do something like this are basically going to boom right away.
Exactly.
Not necessarily, but it's a good question, yeah.
That's an excellent question. Michigan, the Tax Foundation, constantly looks at how the U.S. compares to other countries around the world. And nationally, we now have, as of last November, we've got the most expensive corporate entity tax rates of the richest 37 countries on the planet. And so we've got the most expensive place to do business as far as taxes go. You know, we're not dealing with regulation, we're only dealing with taxes, but taxes is a big component of business decisions. The state of Michigan, the Tax Foundation in Washington, also scores state tax plans, and the latest ranking they put out for business taxation, they scored Michigan at number 48 out of 50 states. Ohio just went through a complete revamp. They phased it in over 4 years, and last year it was finally phased in. And Ohio moved their state in terms of their competitiveness of their state business tax climate. They moved from number 41 up to number 4. I think the state of Virginia is number 1. I mean, they're up there. I'm not sure where South Carolina and North Carolina are, but I know they're ahead of Michigan. And what they've done is they've taken Governor Snyder's new plan, his proposed budget, his new proposed changes to the tax code, and he wants to replace our convoluted, expensive gross receipts tax plus 4.95% profits tax on corporations, and he's redefining which corporations pay it, and he wants to replace it with a 6% profits tax. Well, the Tax Foundation has scored the governor's plan and said that's going to move Michigan into number 22. So, again, after a decade here in Michigan of our state training business investors all over the country, all over the world, to look elsewhere, they know right now there's 47 other states that are better than Michigan as far as the taxing of their business investment. They're still going to know that there's 28 states that are better than Michigan until, here's the other thing, last November was a big election. There's now 35 newly elected governors and legislatures across the country, and all of them are going to be working to improve their business tax climate. Andy, you got a new governor down there. Gosh, I forgot her name. So she's, you know, she's a good conservative down there. Well, if only 10 of the states started to do something this year to improve their business tax climate, Michigan is going to drop back from number 22, probably back to number 32. And so under Governor Snyder's plan currently, and we've already conveyed this to his office, using the Tax Foundation numbers, it's like, why go through all of the painful gyrations that we're going through in this state, all of the protests that are happening on the front lawn of the Lansing Capitol, all the letters and all the call-in radio shows and everything else, to land in the middle of the pack? What the Michigan Fair Tax Plan does as a tax replacement proposal is it replaces all state-imposed business taxation on all business entities. It goes to zero. That would put the state of Michigan in the number one slot. And that's exactly where Michigan needs to be. Michigan does, yay and verily, even though we've had this high unemployment, we still have more tool and die shops than anybody else in the world. We've got a lot of skilled talent left, even though there's a lot of it leaving the state. We've got the infrastructure. We've got the mills and the factories. We can make things, but our tax code has chased most of that away. But it's here to be rebuilt, and just the only thing missing is the business investment. And by setting the business investment taxes at zero, I can look Ohio square in the eye and say, okay, great, Ohio, compete with zero. And that's what the fair tax will do. The fair tax will get our job providers and our employers lined back up at the border, kind of beat feet back into the state of Michigan to set up shop and to work. All 83 counties will be a totally tax-free zone for all industries, and you won't ever have to go to government anymore to get a little morsel, have them break it off the table and give you a little tax favor. So the fair tax is definitely the way to go for that.
With that said, I'm going to play this little piece. This is perfect on topic for what we're talking about right now. It's only about 30 seconds, but in a debate, this was several years ago, Alan Keith took the words right out of all of our mouth. This is why we need the fair tax. This is very, very true.
Isn't at the heart of it this kind of tax something that disproportionately hits the poor over the wealthy?
Can't possibly be. The present tax system, which allows you to escape taxation if you're wealthy enough to pay accountants and lawyers, is what disproportionately hits the poor and the working middle-class people of this country. Under my system, you don't pay taxes until you decide how to spend your own money. And when you take it to the store and decide how to spend it, if you can't afford to be heavily taxed right now, you will confine yourself to those goods that are not taxed, to those goods that are necessities of life. And yes, that's going to mean some sacrifices, but it puts the question of how you develop your wealth base back under your control. You don't have to beg politicians and bureaucrats to get back in control of your own hard-earned dollars. But it also means that if you're a working person, think about it. Before you have put bread in the mouths of your children, before you put a roof over the head of those children, before you put a stitch of clothes on their back today, you pay the government. where were Zoth and Serf? Serfs used to pay their masters after they were fed and clothed. We have to pay our master before we're fed and clothed. I think it's a crime.
He's right.
Yep, it is, and that's exactly. Sorry for the echo. I'm on a different mic now, but it is what the fair tax does. It puts the wealth base right back in our control. And for many of you listening who are attending college, who are regulars, I think it's very important to listen to John, to go to the website, and a lot of you are from all over the state, and we need to plant just like we do in the spring. You know, we plant little plants. And we need to bury these seeds, and we need to start watering it and growing this, because this idea puts the power back to the hands of us. If you think about it, I mean, people who are 20, they almost, even going way back, we know nothing but of begging government for our money back, for a little bit of change here or there. This puts our wealth base right in our own control. And on top of that, if I'm not correct, we really don't pay taxes until we decide to pay it. Is that correct, John?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. It's the largest transfer of power away from the government back to we the people since the nation was formed. Yeah, absolutely. And the tax is applied on new goods and consumer services. So the consumer services is new in Michigan because we don't have a services tax. We are including the services industries. And it's for new goods. Used goods are not going to have a sales tax on them any longer. For instance, if you go to a used car lot and buy a used car, today you have a 6% sales tax under the Michigan Fair Tax. The used car sales taxes are going to go away, but the sales tax is going to be imposed on new goods and consumer services. There's no taxes by businesses, you know, like if a business go to buy their toilet paper and office supplies and toner and stuff like that for their office. Businesses don't charge each other the sales tax. And again, the reason for that is if they got to pay a sales tax, they just take those sales taxes and they either bury them in the prices of the stuff that they're selling, or they take it away from the employees in the form of lower wages, or the people that are the owners of the company take a smaller, you know, profit or dividend out of it. So we, the people, actually wind up paying for it anyway. We just, that's another way to hide a small part of the cost of government. We don't want to do that. So businesses don't pay sales taxes to each other. It's just we, the consumer, wind up paying it when we decide that we're going to go out and buy something that's new or a new consumer service. So, yeah, exactly right. It puts us in the driver's seat.
Yeah, well, John's completely right, but there's a huge market that you've missed, and you're talking about real estate, and real estate is one of the biggest things that's been guiding our economy. So if someone turns around and buys a previously owned home, not a brand new construction, they're not paying a sales tax on that new home.
Yeah,
wow.
The Michigan Fair Tax is slightly different the way that the proposal is typed up. A brand new home is going to have a sales tax on it in the state of Michigan. And then if, let's say that somebody builds a brand new house and they sell a brand new house for $200,000. There's a sales tax involved. But there's also a Michigan real estate transfer tax that's involved with all real estate transactions on houses that goes to the state of Michigan. That's eliminated. It's replaced by the sales tax. But then on subsequent sales of the house, the sales tax is only going to apply in Michigan on the increase in the value of the house. So if the house goes up to $210,000 the next time it's sold, the sales tax is going to apply on the increment going up in Michigan. If it goes down, there's no sales tax.
Okay,
South Carolina doesn't have that. Yeah,
all right, the South Carolina
thing.
Proposal doesn't have that one. That's a little difference between, I guess, Michigan and South Carolina. We don't have that. But do you have it where if someone were to purchase, and I know this is in South Carolina, if someone were to purchase a brand new item, say, for example, a computer or a car for their business purpose, but in the interim afterwards they use it in the business, but they convert it now to personal use, do you have a tax on that? Because we do. But it's at the value at the time of conversion.
I haven't actually come across that one, but I'm writing it down. I'm going to go look it up and find out exactly.
To me, that seems like a legitimate question, because it actually closes the loophole where businesses, people that own businesses, may decide, all right, I'm going to buy my Mercedes-Benz for the business, but then 6 months later convert it into personal use. I think that's a great loophole they're closing in that, so that they say, all right, fine, you've had it for 6 months in the business, but now you convert it to personal use. Okay, this is the value at the time you convert it, so you're only paying the tax at the time you convert it. So it gives you a little leeway saying, all right, you might be honest, but it might not be, but we're going to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, that's very reasonable. That's a very reasonable approach. I haven't come across that one, but that's a very reasonable approach.
Yeah. On the real estate question, Jessica, I'm sorry, she types in here and she private messages me. Annie, she typed this to me like 20 minutes ago. She goes, that was my question, you dummy. Why didn't you ask it before her?
Jessica, you're a very smart woman. Very smart woman.
Kitty's the one with the double barrel shotgun, so we'll let her get away with this. John, let me play devil's advocate here, okay? This tax, as it was in the piece for Alan Keyes, this tax or this new philosophy, it's bad. It hurts the poor, those who are making 25 grand a year. What do you say to that?
Actually, this helps the poor more than any other tax proposal out there. What we do is we completely untax the poor. Today, the poor, if they do have a part-time job, they are paying payroll taxes. They are paying Medicare tax, Social Security tax. They're having income tax withheld. In Michigan, if their income is low enough, they probably don't wind up netting out paying income taxes. But then when they go to the store in Michigan, we charge the poor 6% sales tax today. What we do with the Michigan fair tax, and this, again, this is patterned after the national fair tax, but I want to, so that I'm not getting people confused, and we do get a lot of people confused. They hear stuff from the national and they hear the Michigan thing. But in Michigan, what we're doing is we're wiping out all the payroll taxes, the income taxes imposed by the state, and we then turn around. Here's the way it works. It's a two-step process. Everybody, when they go buy something new in consumer services, everybody in Michigan will pay the same at the cash register sales tax rate. And we've computed that. We had a study done. We're actually updating the study right now, which is actually looking pretty good. It might not need to be this high, but right now officially we're at 9.75%. So the Michigan at the cash register sales tax rate would need to be 9.75%. So everybody goes out and they pay that at the cash register. That's step one. Step two is every legal household in the state of Michigan, based only on the size or the number of people legal that are in the country legally that live in your household, you will receive all of your sales taxes back from the government every month. We give you your taxes back up to the amount of the federal poverty level. The updated numbers for 2011, the poverty level is set in Washington, D.C., so that means Lansing can't screw with the numbers. If you live by yourself, the poverty level this year is $10,890. So if you're a one-person household, you're going to get 9.75% back every month at the start of the month, and that's $88.48. A two-person check, the poverty level is $14,710, you're going to get back $119.52 a month. If you have four people living in your house, the poverty level is $22,350, so you're going to get back $181.59. So what that means is, if you're, let's say you've got seven people in the household, the poverty level is $33,810, so your prebate payment every month from the state is going to be $274.71 a month. And what that's doing is we're handing you back the sales taxes that you have paid up to whatever that poverty level is. So, again, you get to buy whatever it is that you need for your family. If it's diapers, great. If it's a jar of caviar, great. if it's a jar of tube of toothpaste, that's great. It's whatever you need up to the poverty level. We're just going to say we just exempt that level of taxation from that level of spending from taxation. It's similar.
Well, John,
today on
John, I'm moving up to Michigan because if the federal fair tax goes in with the Michigan fair tax, heck, I'm going to have a bunch of money coming in my household.
What people don't understand is that we're
prebating back ahead of time before you even start to pay your sales tax. And I asked Mike this the other day, and I said, sit down and put down all the sales receipts for everything you paid for during the month. And on the federal sales tax, if you have the fair tax, I mean, if you pay for two individuals, they prebate you somewhere about $300 and change. I forget what the exact figure is. And I said, for two people in your household, do you spend that much money in sales tax? Put your receipts down and look at the figures. And I guarantee you, unless you're buying expensive stereo and 15,000 CDs and, you know, really going nuts, majority of people don't spend as much money as what the prebate is going to come back at. And I sat down with my husband when I first read the fair tax books, which was about 2 years ago when it first came out. And I sat down with my husband. We took our receipts and looked at the money and said, honey, we're going to come out $200 a month ahead of time because we're not spending that much in sales tax. Unless we go out to dinner every night and buy drinks and do this and that, we're not even going to come close. So these prebates are going to cover any poor person and then some. So in the end, they're not paying tax, period. It is a zero return on anyone that's earning, I would say anyone earning less than $30,000 a year, it's a zero return.
Right. In the state of Michigan, you can let's take a household of four people. You got four people in there. So you're going to get your $181.59 a month back from the state, for your state sales tax. You can spend $22,350 and your net sales tax is zero. So you've left 9.75% at the cash register, and they're going to give you 9.75% back on your debit card every month, and that's about to be zero. If you spent $25,000 per year, it's 1.03%. That's the state sales tax rate. So if you have a four-person household and you spend $25,000 on new goods and consumer services, the sales tax rate is 1.03%. I'll just read off a couple other ones. If you spend $50,000, your net sales tax rate is 5.39%. If you spend $75,000, your net sales tax rate is 6.84%. If you could spend $250,000, your net sales tax rate is 8.88%. If you could spend $500,000 a year, it would be 9.31%. So it really winds up being very progressive. So if you happen to be in a position to spend a lot of money, you're going to pay more in taxes and your rate's going to be higher. And this completely untaxes the poor is what it does. So.
Okay,
and you're right.
You
in a lot of cases, Danny, you're going to wind up, a lot of people have more cash left over.
Okay, hold that thought, both of you. We're going to take a break. Stay with me. Here is a... you know, in all of my life, I've never agreed with Mike Huckabee on absolutely anything. But we're going to play a piece by Mike Huckabee, go into a break, and we'll be right back. John, do you have to go, or can you stay with us for a few more minutes?
Sure. I can hang out for a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I'm going to throw a question out to you now and just let you think about it over the break. Individuals writing, I think this is a comment thrown for you, and they wanted a response. So basically, people who are receiving jobs under the table or pay no taxes now officially will have to pay because it's sales tax and not income tax. We'll jump into a break, and then we'll come back and let you answer that question. Here's Mike Huckabee talking about the fair tax.
Governor Huckabee, you may be the biggest supporter of the fair tax on this stage. You say replace the income tax with a 23% national sales tax. Now, back in 2005, President Bush's Tax Reform Commission did a study about the fair tax. They said the sales tax rate would have to be 34%, not 23%, and that no state, no country has ever put in a 34% sales tax. How do you respond to that, and also the fact that President Bush's tax commission says that with a fair tax that high, there are only two income groups that would benefit, those making less than $30,000 a year and those making more than $200,000?
Well, Chris, the first problem is that the Bush tax panel did not look at the fair tax proposal. They looked at something that called itself that, but it was not. The true fair tax proposal is a 23%. And what it does do is empower everyone in the economy, not just the people at the bottom and the very top, but all of the middle class, which is a desperate need. It's pretty sad right now that the average American is more afraid of an IRS audit than getting mugged. But that's the truth. And the reason is because the IRS has the power not just to come after us for a few seconds, but to keep coming after us. What we would do with the fair tax is to eliminate all the taxes on productivity, which means you could earn anything you want. You wouldn't be penalized for saving, earning, for having a capital gain, making an investment. What you would do is you'd pay a tax when you consume something, and it ends the underground economy of illegals, prostitutes, drug dealers. Everybody has to pay. And if people would look at this objectively, they'd find that it's the best way to get rid of the corruption in government, because it eliminates those 35,000 lobbyists out there trying to make winners and losers, and most of us end up being losers in the process.
Is it time to do away with these earmarks?
Totally. Totally. It's abominable. And the only way you're going to get rid of it is to give the president the line item veto. And, of course, they're not going to give the president line item veto. What we need to do is change the entire tax structure. I want to point out that the Comptroller General of the United States invited all the presidential candidates to come in for a briefing. I went in for a briefing. He said there was only two other people that came in for a briefing. What the briefing he told us is that we have a fiscal gap on the order of $50 trillion. And you're hearing all this money is going to be spent to do all these great things? My God, don't believe a word of it. Follow the money. You can't get all this money coming at you, millions of dollars, from all the special interests, and think that they're not going to deal with solving the problems with special interests.
Right.
Won't happen.
Well, that was, second part was Mike Gravel, and welcome back. John, thanks for sticking with us for a little long. Area code 716, are you with us?
Yeah, yep. How you doing? Yeah, this is William. You told me to give you a call today, so I'm calling up.
Well, good, William. We have a guest on the line. John, do you want to hang on a second, William? John, do you want to answer that question from – you know what? I'm sorry whoever asked that question. I'm just getting bombed with private messages. But questions, do you want to answer that regarding
– just go ahead and repeat the question real quick, Mike.
Well, they had a comment. Basically, they basically said the fair tax – will eliminate those who are being paid under the table, and those who do not report income will now be forced to pay taxes because this is a sales tax for everybody. Is that correct?
It's absolutely correct, because in income tax, for instance, there, you know, no criminal activity is reported on your 1040 tax return. You know, guys going out stealing cars. If you get paid $400 to steal somebody's Chevy Volt or something like that, why does somebody steal the car? They steal the car to get the money. So what do they do with the $400 they got for stealing the car? They give it to some guy who's going to have it in Chicago or Detroit in a million parts by midnight, you know. And you take your $400, and what do you do with the car thief? Takes his $400. Why does he do it? So he has money to spend. So when he goes out and spends it, he spends it. And so that whole black market economy is not participating in the income tax system, nor are illegal immigrants filing proper tax returns. You don't have drug dealers that are participating. And so what this does, what a sales tax does, is it's an almost near-perfect way to tax anybody's wealth, because it taxes it at the point where you convert some of it into something that you need or want. And if you go to the IRS.gov website, do a search in their search box for tax gap, and they got a couple pages in there where the IRS is very, very concerned about the tax gap. On a federal level, the tax gap is between $345 billion and $400 billion per a year. That's the amount of taxes owed under an income tax system that they can't collect. And they say with IRS tax collection efforts, and those are a lot of fun, we're able to collect $55 billion a year, but there's between, you know, $290 and $350 billion that they never collect. So they make a statement and they say, and so, Congressman, you're setting your tax rates, your tax policies, keep this into account. Just know that there's about 15, 16% of taxes we can never get to. We can never collect it. So all of our income taxes and our business taxes, probably 12, 14, 15% higher than they need to be just to cover the tax gap. And a sales tax system collects well over 98% of the taxes owed. It's a very simple tax. Any 10-year-old who's been to the mall can come home after two trips to the mall. They can come home and explain the entire state sales tax system to you. And they can tell you exactly how much the sales tax is. And so, yeah, you're right. So all of the black market economy and the drug dealers and illegal immigration and all that kind of stuff, as far as taxes, the government no longer needs to know how much money we earn, how we earn it, where we earn it. If we all got it on the last day of the year or the first day, it doesn't make any difference. It's when you go out and spend it, and then you just go out and spend it. Everybody pays the same at the cash register sales tax rate when you buy something new, and everybody gets a prebate back based on the size of the legal residence, number of legal residents you have in your household. So it's a very, very simple. It's going to replace over 72,000 pages of IRS tax code and probably 3,000 or 4,000 pages of Michigan tax code, down to probably about 100 pages altogether. So it's really cool.
Yeah, John, I think what I'm looking at the chat room, and some people are confusing the fair tax with the VAT tax. And what they don't understand, a VAT tax occurs from the very moment the first item is taxed. So every step along the way, a tax is imposed on every single item that goes to the end production. So, for example, if you have a loaf of bread, the farmer who buys the seed, the farmer who waters the soil, the farmer that ends up buying the equipment and buys the gas for it, every step of the way, he's going to be taxed. And that value of the tax is added on to the end of the product. You may end up with higher than 23%, sometimes even as high as 50% tax upon an item that you end up buying in the end. But with the fair tax, with all the taxes removed, and not only just the taxes, but the cost of complying with the tax codes is also removed. So all those expenses that go with it. So you're actually reducing the end product by more than 23% in cost. So a product, say, for example, a loaf of bread, the end product goes and hits the shelf at $1.99, you may be able to reduce that product to $1.75, $1.50, even down to $1. Now, you're paying 23% on a dollar worth of goods compared to paying 23% on the end product at $1.99. That's a big difference. Now, what would you do? Pay 23% on $1.99 or 23% on $1 or $1.50? I'd rather go for the lower end, take all the taxes, take all those costs out, the accountant that has to go with it, the CPA that has to watch over the accountant, the tax company that you're paying your money into, the end product that you end up having for your taxes at the end of the year. I mean, I know I ended up stopping using CPAs for my taxes for my husband's business because when I looked at it and I was getting a $25 refund, but it cost me $300 or $400 to have the tax accountant handle it, I'm going, where is the equity here? I'm paying more money to get my fair end of the taxes than I'm getting in the end. I mean, $25 refund and I just paid you $325? Where'd the extra $300 go? Up in the air. That all disappears. People don't have to do that. They don't have to buy TurboTax. Tim Geithner, we don't need TurboTax anymore with the fair tax.
Yeah, Tim Geithner wouldn't have to suffer through all the humiliation that he put himself through. Exactly right. Yeah, exactly right. The VAT tax, too, if somebody's talking about the VAT tax, the reason that that's coming up is our president likes things European, and he wants to go to a European-style VAT tax, value-added tax, because most of the European countries are doing that. The VAT tax is slightly superior to the current corporate entity taxes the way we do it. It would be a slight improvement
to do that because the VAT tax is geared up so that the way they track it, they can easily not, when they do their export, none of the tax cost goes into the price of the export. But because of the way we do our income taxes in this state and in this country, it's impossible to peel out the income tax system we have in this country out of our exports. So are all of our American products going abroad, all of our Michigan products going out of state, have to take the cost of business taxation with them in the prices, while European products coming over here with a VAT tax do not have those taxes coming over. The fair tax gives us the best of both worlds because it just totally wipes out all of the business taxation, and overnight, or if we do it at the national level, all of our American products become way more competitive. If we do it at the state level, Michigan products become way more competitive. And it's just like our state removing everybody's tariffs against our state because we've got an internal tariff and it's our corporate tax structure. We're just wiping it out. So all of a sudden, and why are exports important? If you students are listening, the country that exports more than it imports has a growing living standard. The country state that imports more than it exports has a decreasing living standard. And so you need to export more, and we've got it just totally screwed up right now.
You bring a really good point when you talk about import exports. We lost a lot of jobs because of this NAFTA, TAFTA, and whatever ever after they have on these export BS things that Bush 1, Clinton, Bush 2, and now Obama is doing. But if we turn around and do a fair tax,
forever after.
It is. That it is. But if we do the fair tax, that means companies that work inside the United States do not pay a single dollar in corporate tax. They're not paying payroll taxes. They're not paying any tax whatsoever. The only thing that happens is that when those owners go out and buy an end product, that's the only time they pay a tax. And that tax is not then... Right, and that tax, 99% of the time, will not get passed on to the consumer because they have no way to pass it on to the consumer. So
right.
When they go
they
into production,
the consumer, right.
Because now when they go to production with a loaf of bread, the item they paid for is what the exact cost that goes in there with their profit added on. There's nothing in between. You're not paying for those tax accountants. You're not paying for the CPAs. You're not paying for the lobbyists. All that goes away. So that item, what they built is exactly what it cost and their profit. So their accounting procedures become so much less, the product becomes lesser. And what does that make the United States? A tax haven in the globe. We become the world's largest tax haven. So what's going to happen? Manufacturing jobs will come back to the United States. Those technology jobs will return to the United States. Our economy will boom because we have the quality people to fill those jobs where, for example, if they go to India or China, they may have some qualified people. But no, we have the qualified people. Bring them back here to the United States. Bring these manufacturing jobs, these technology jobs, these whatever Ethernet science jobs, whatever. They will return to us, and we will become the global power we always have been. We return ourselves back to that stature.
Right. Well, as a matter of fact,
am I passionate about this? What?
You're totally right on. American corporations, these are American-owned, American citizens own these businesses, own between $13 and $15 trillion in cash that they've earned overseas, or possibly they've invested overseas because the investments are better overseas than they are in the United States. And they're sitting on $13 to $15 trillion in cash. These are American-owned corporate entities, but they can't bring the cash back on shore because the tax rates are so high. Right off the bat, in America, they lose 40% of all the money they bring back to America. So they just leave it over there, and they keep building more Pizza Huts in Spain, you know, and they keep making more money over there. And as soon as you put the fair tax in nationally, the corporate tax structure goes away, A lot of experts predict, like, the first year, you probably have between $3 and $5 trillion of American money coming back home to invest in American business. I mean, you,
wow.
you talk about a boom, it would be incredible, absolutely incredible.
Now Brian, I see inside the chat room, someone asked about the military. Now, with the federal fair tax, the military will, government entities and military will be paying a tax on the end product. So even the government will be subject to the fair tax. So you get yourself, you're buying yourself a $500 scanner that probably cost $5.99 inside Sears. The military will be spending and the government will be spending tax, paying tax, I shouldn't be saying spending, but paying tax into the system themselves. So that money will go back into the government system.
All righty. John, do you want to make a closing statement? Thank you so much for being here, John. I mean, really enjoyed it. Do you want to make a closing statement?
I would just say, I just tell people keep drilling down and getting information from credible sources. Fairtax.org is a great one. MIFairTax.org is the state website that we have set up. We have just tons of documentation, and it does what it says it does, and it everything is just very, very well documented. It's very, very, very simple, and it will put Michigan back to work. It will get rid of, six basic state-imposed taxes. It guarantees our local revenue sharing to the cities, so they aren't, getting voted out of their money by the legislature all the time. That goes right in the Constitution, and it takes the legislature right out of the tax-setting business. And it's definitely the thing that's going to put Michigan back to work, and nationally it's going to put America back to work. And Annie's going to get this done in South Carolina, and you're going to see South Carolina taking off, and South Carolina's going to get back to work. And this is just going to restore, we're entitled to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We can't have liberty without economic liberty, and businesses are the way people organize themselves to go out and achieve economic liberty. And that's just been all transferred away to the government over, especially the last 50, 60 years. And the fair tax is the one thing that will move it all back to the people. So it's a cool thing. Just keep checking it out.
Before I let you go, I got to ask, Monica, chill out. She keeps posting. She wanted to know, how do I find out who is my local fair tax person to contact about volunteering? She's from the Traverse City area.
The Traverse City area? We got a guy up there by the name of Randy Bishop lives in Traverse City. Tristan Cole is another one. Rich Carlson. But the names are actually on the MichiganFairTax.org website. And right on the front page, I want to say it's kind of down, maybe the kind of lower left part of the homepage there, MIFairTax.org. It says you can find your volunteers. We got it organized by congressional district. And that would be the second congressional district up there. Or is that the fourth? That might be the fourth. Anyway, but send me an email because I kind of do the entire state, and I'll get you in touch with somebody right there on the ground, and we'll get you plugged in. So, but you can go to that MIFairTax.org website. There's find your leader volunteer or whatever. Click on that. Another page will open up. There'll be a list of people with names, phone numbers, and email addresses. But I'm john.crawford. So it's john.crawford@mifairtax.org. And so you can shoot me an email on that, too, and we'll get you squared away that way, too.
All righty. John, thank you so much for joining us. I'd love to have you back, say, in a couple months. We'll see where we're going. All righty, John. Thanks again.
John, it was fun talking to you. It was great.
Yeah, this was super. I enjoyed it a lot. Good luck to you down there in South Carolina.
No luck to her, John. We got to beat these South Carolinas. They're thoroughbred. They're passionate.
We're going to beat South Carolina. We'll do
them to the punch.
Dang.
Thank you, guys.
All righty. Thank you, John. That was John Crawford, executive member of the Michigan Fair Tax. We're going to go into a break, and we're going to come back. Our buddy from Buffalo is going to join us. Annie, stick around because we're going to play a piece, which I think Annie mentioned was a couple years ago. There are $9 trillion missing of your money, everybody. $9 trillion. You're going to see the greatest interview you ever saw. You think this person was me a couple years back or several years back when I was being questioned about furnishing alcohol to a minor, and they ask you a question, you're like, what, huh, who, when? $9 billion of our money is gone. Can you imagine that? Where is it? Anybody know where it's at? Well, stick around. I'm gonna play this piece.
It's Obama money.
The topic is we have money to burn. So listen to this piece, and we'll jump back in. And Tony, I'm gonna open your mic, our buddy from Buffalo. And John, if you want to call in, jump right in.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Inspector Coleman, you're the Inspector General for the Federal Reserve, right? Okay.
That's correct.
Have you done any investigations concerning the Federal Reserve's role in deciding not to save Lehman Brothers, which led to shockwaves and went through the entire financial system?
In that particular area, you know, I don't generally comment on specific investigations, but we do not currently have an investigation in that particular area.
All right. What about the $1 trillion plus an expansion of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet since last September? Have you conducted any investigations regarding that?
Right now we have we call it a review, and I don't know if the term investigation may have different connotations. We're actually conducting a fairly high-level review of the various lending facilities collectively, which would include the TALF, a variety of the different programs that are in process. So we're looking at them at a fairly high level to identify risk.
Well, I understand that, but we're talking about events that started unfolding 8 months ago. Have you reached any conclusions about the Fed expanding its balance sheet by over $1 trillion since last September?
We have not yet reached any conclusions.
Do you know who received that money?
We're in the process right now of doing our review, and
right, but you're the Inspector General. My question to you specifically is, do you know who received that $1 trillion plus that the Fed extended and put on its balance sheet since last September? Do you know the identity of the recipients?
I do not know. We have not looked at that specific area at this particular point on those reviews.
What about Bloomberg's report that there are trillions of dollars in off-balance sheets transactions that the Federal Reserve has entered into since last September? Are you familiar with those off-balance sheet transactions?
You know, I think it may be important at this point, too, just to bring up a certain aspect related to our jurisdiction. And just to clarify perhaps some of my earlier comments, we are the Inspector General for the Board of Governors, and we have direct oversight over board programs and operations, and are also able to look at board-delegated functions to the reserve banks, as well as the board's oversight and supervision of the reserve banks. We do not have jurisdiction to directly go out and audit reserve bank activities specifically. Nevertheless, in our lending facilities project, for example, we are looking at the board's oversight over the program, and to the extent that extends out to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York.
Well, I have a copy of the Inspector General Act here in front of me, and it says, among other things, that it's your responsibility to conduct and supervise audits and investigations relating to the programs and operations of your agency.
That's correct.
So I'm asking you if your agency has, in fact, according to Bloomberg, extended $9 trillion in credit, which, by the way, works out to $30,000 for every single man, woman, and child in this country. I'd like to know, if you're not responsible for investigating that, who is?
We have responsibility for the Federal Reserve's programs and operations audits, to conduct audits and investigations in that area. In terms of who's responsible for investigating, would you mind repeating the question one more time?
What have you done to investigate?
All right, I'm going to jump out of that piece. Is it possible that somebody can be more frickin' stupid and more dumb and this individual, you mind repeating the question? He just asked where the hell the money is, lady. Oh, my God. Tony, Anthony, your mic is open. Annie, we'll let you have the first comment. Can you believe this? If I were there, I would have just slapped her senseless.
Can you say without a clue?
Oh, my God.
Completely without a clue. Now, this is what gets me. This was done May 5th, 2009, and they still have not answered the question. Has anyone found where this money went? And you think about this. This is three-fifths of our national debt that's missing. Three-fifths of our national debt.
Three-fifths is what percentage? I'm not good with three-fifths. Is that like 30%, 80%?
It's close to two-thirds.
Okay, so two-thirds.
It sounds like someone's exercising in the background.
Anthony, is that you in the background there?
What is he doing, push-ups?
No.
I feel like I'm in mystery theater here on the radio.
I had to mute his mic. We'll jump back into him. The part I like the best of this is he asks her title, and then mm-hmm. she's like, "Yeah, I do the auditing for Federal Reserve." Thinking to myself, "What, you can't answer the question on what your job is?" No. Somebody asks me, "What do I do at this place?" I'm
well,
a cook.
You know,
what do you do at this bar? I'm a bartender. What do you do at this club? I dance. I mean, how is it? She's so puzzled. Oh, my God. You know, honestly, I think you had the fat cat sitting around a table laughing, and they said, like, let's send this girl. And they were just laughing, thinking they know nothing's going to happen to them. So, you know, just send somebody to make who can't answer the question. Trillion bucks. That money belongs to us.
I think this is a symptom of the entire administration, because she's not the only one. And there's tape after tape after tape up on YouTube, not tape, but video, up on YouTube where they do the same thing over and over again. It's not just her. It is endemic inside the entire administration. And if this is what the administration is, and I'm sorry to say that I did not vote for Jimmy Carter, but I was there at that election. And I'm afraid this administration is going to prove to be worse than Jimmy Carter. At least he didn't have a clue and he was honest about it. This is an administration without a clue, and they pretend they know what the heck is going on.
Or they do have a clue and they're taking us right in the direction that they want.
That's scary.
In the chat room, you said, "Forgive me, you always screw up promoting my show." What was that? What was that meant to be?
Oh, because I always get the name of the show that you're doing tonight. I know it's Robert Jones, but I always mess up the whole thing. I apologize on that.
Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. It took me a week before I finally wrote it down. And all right, the next piece I'm going to play, I come to the table here, all my notes and everything prepared, and just hearing stuff, it just aggravates me to no end. And I wanted to play the rest of that piece, but, I mean, I don't want to really put a monitor through a window or anything or listen to this, just listen to these morons talk.
That's all right. I put my guns away.
Well, I mean, what it basically is these people just love to listen to themselves. And, I mean, here's a perfect example where $9 trillion is missing. And basically, whose heads roll? Where's the money? Nobody's really this person walked away from this, whether it was 25 minutes, an hour, an hour and a half. But they walked away basically thinking, that's it. There is nothing more after this. They got away with everything. And it's very, very aggravating. I'm going to play a song real quick, and then we'll come at the bottom of the hour. And we'll continue the topic. Money to burn. We just got all kinds of trillions to burn here. If you look at the description box, Annie, I got a picture of Obama and he's burning.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that, baby doll.
isn't that just? Oh my!
Poetic.
Goodness. Anyway,
poetic.
We're gonna play.
You're an artist.
Play a quick song. And we'll be back in approximately 3 minutes. Stay with us, everybody. And feel free to call in. Our numbers are 347-884-8500 or toll-free on Dr. Jones's dime, not Annie's dime this time, 877-666-9355.
Well, then tell them to find me on Southern Sense.
Well, yeah. Well, see, Annie, we're on a budget here. We only can afford the $40 premium. We're not upscale like you and get
paid
the $100
premium.
You and Yanni drive those expensive SUVs. We'll be right back, everybody.
In the meantime, Annie's going to refresh her cocktail.
Conservative Report. This is cool. Mike in for Dr. Jones. Also tonight, my friend, you're going to be able to catch me, I believe, on 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. GGT has asked me to help co-host tonight, and I will do that. So, Annie, if you're even up, you and Yanni, you can cash in on, I don't know, everybody's pulling me around today. And as of next week, the question that I got, I'm going to weigh my options. I'm going to fulfill this week with Dr. Jones and just kind of... We're just going to kind of take it from there. I've made no commitments anywhere. So, we'll see. All righty. Let's see if our buddy Anthony from Buffalo is on. Anthony, are you with us?
You mean William.
Hey, Tony.
Oh, I'm sorry. William, I'm sorry. William, okay, good. William, what was going on, man? It sounded like you guys were in a boxing match or something.
Oh, I was moving some stuff around.
Oh, okay. Welcome, William. And
I don't know if that was me.
John.
I don't know if you could have even heard that, but I don't know if that was me, actually. I was moving some stuff around, though.
I thought you were bench pressing or sit-ups or something.
Oh, no.
Well, way to go. Welcome. John, are you with us from Philadelphia?
Yeah, hello. Yes.
All righty. Great.
Hey,
well,
John.
Anyway,
how you doing tonight, baby?
Yeah, I was listening to... the Perry Steele Show, and it's a regular caller by the name of Joe that calls in. I think he must have worked in finance or something, but he happens to be a member of a third party, and he made the statement that the Federal Reserve Bank is the one that is actually loaning the money to the government, and that the Federal Reserve is the one that is actually going through the process of printing out the money. So what the government wants in terms of currency, it goes to the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve issues the money to the government at an interest rate in which it's paid back to the Federal Reserve. So whatever debt we have, the government is able to print the money to cover the debt. Now, the taxes that come in, they go into a part of the budget, but the tax dollars are not as needed as each person who's a citizen is made to believe. Because if the government is extremely indebted, it goes to the Federal Reserve Bank, and they can get the money out of the Federal Reserve Bank. So it's not like if everybody stopped paying taxes, the government would go broke. That's not the situation.
Okay. William, did you want to comment on that?
What, Federal Reserve or just missing money?
William, you, are you calling on a regular phone? There's a lot of background noise coming from you.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you what, I'll call back.
Okay, thanks. All righty. Annie, you want to go ahead and make a comment?
Well, you know what? If they ever do implement the fair tax, they can get rid of the Federal Reserve, the IRS, the EPA, and about, I could say, probably about another 30 or 40 different government agencies. So you know what? I couldn't care less. Let's get the fair tax in there, get rid of all of them. Don't worry about government printing money because they won't be able to anymore because you're going to be forced to have government backed by the gold and silver standards like we did before. You know, stop playing games and let's get back to reality here.
Yeah, well,
well
John,
I mean,
is,
what people don't realize is that we're not in a really gold or silver backed currency. We're in a fiat currency, which is generated by the Federal Reserve. So
exactly,
the
and that's what I'm saying. Go back to the gold and silver standard. Stop playing these games, this paper money, because the paper money is not backed, and you can't turn around and predict what the dollar is going to be, and the dollar is going to keep on devaluing, devaluing, devaluing. So now the bread that you're paying $1.99 for, in about 6 months you're going to be paying $5 for, because the federal government and the Fed are turning around and letting the money run amok. Back it again with the gold and silver standard. If you have a basis behind it, you can't manipulate the money like that any longer.
Yep, that's very, very true. William is back with us from Buffalo, New York. William.
Yeah, yeah. How I'm sounding now? How does it sound now?
It's much better. Go ahead. Did you
want to?
I want to say,
especially about the missing money. What people, I don't know, the $9 trillion. That's ridiculous. But you know, Donald Rumsfeld came up on national TV, C-SPAN. Talking about 2.3 million just from the Pentagon budget alone. You know, that was right the day before 9/11. The $9 trillion is just not this one administration. It does extend to the previous administration as well. Another problem that we have is we still got billions of dollars missing out of Iraq. So it's not just the $9 trillion that this, because that particular clip that you were playing, we're talking about this mission. You have a lot more money from a lot more sectors of our government and finance that's missing. And not only that, like the gentleman was talking about the Federal Reserve, when they were Federal Reserve was distributing money, you know, they have no idea where they basically told our media they have no idea where this money is. You know, and
unbelievable. It seems like nobody knows where the hell the cash is. I'm going to play this piece where actually it is. Rumsfeld is as stupid as this woman. He's just, you know, this is funny. And he used to be a police officer, so you maybe can relate. You ask someone a question, which is simple, like, what is your name? And it's like they start twiddling their hair. They're like in deep thought rubbing their forehead. Like, hello? I mean, is it this difficult to answer a simple question? And I mean, they're just so baffled. They're so stupid.
Do you mean like what is? What do you mean by is?
Yeah, something along those lines. God, unbelievable. I mean, I almost don't believe that it's possible that this much money could be missing. It's so much money. It's almost like it can't be a true story. Anyway, stand by. We're gonna go into this piece, and then we'll jump back and open it up to comments.
I get tired of saying that defense is to be made an excuse for $20. I don't think we should pay 1 cent for defense more than we have to.
I seriously question an increase in the Pentagon budget in the face of the department's recent Inspector General's report. How can we seriously consider a $50 million increase in the defense budget when DOD's own auditors when DOD's own auditor say the department cannot account for $2.3 trillion in transactions in 1 year alone?
It is... I was going to say terrifying. It is such a monumental task. I have met with two former officials of the Pentagon who served in the budget and controller and those areas. And I've mused over the fact that I've read some of these things and asked what they thought.
No shit.
We process nearly 10 million paychecks a month. 10 million times to get things screwed up. I've had my pay screwed up 6 times since I've been in the department, and it's really bad when you screw up your boss's pay.
I doubt, to be honest, that people inside the department are going to be capable of sorting this out. I have a feeling it's going to take some folks from outside to come in and look at this and put in place a process that over a period, and I regret to say, but I've seen how long things take. I think it's going to take a period of years to sort it out, and I think it'll probably take the cooperation of the Congress to try to get the system so that you can actually manage the financial aspects of that institution rather than simply report on things that have happened imperfectly.
There's more oversight over the Head Start program than there is over the entire military budget.
It's a terrible record, and it's preposterous that the Defense Department doesn't know what's happened to this money.
This situation's a disgrace. It tells me that we can't meet our constitutional obligations to the taxpayers of our country to make sure that things are honestly and legally spent.
We're told major cuts in education programs, and then we read, well, you know, $500 million is paid per year. It isn't owed.
It is an incredible thing that we arm the world and then turn around and come to Congress and say, look at all these weapons out there. They're almost superior to ours. They're comparable to ours. Well, of course they are. They're ours. We sold them to them.
Since the end of the Cold War, we've sold more military weapons than the rest of the world combined.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether thought or unthought, by the military-industrial complex.
All righty.
I just want to say that's the only edge that America has, is in the sense that America has to have a bigger gun than the next guy. That's the only way America is able to stay supreme in the world. They have to have the fear of the other people in the world of America, the fact that we have something that they don't know about, and we can go over there and we can go into any country and basically like send off missiles and rockets and annihilate everybody. That's the advantage. I mean, it's not the advantage that people think that we have a stronger work ethic and we have more people who are innovators. No, the advantage is that we have bigger weapons than everybody else, and that's how we're able to strike fear in everybody. So therefore, if we start selling off all our weapons, the other side is going to have an advantage over us.
Yep. Annie, do you want to comment on that piece? Or even Donald Rumsfeld, we got $9 trillion. Throw in $2.3 billion. Man, who in the hell is getting filthy, loadedly rich on this dough?
Not us. But I'm a little confused because you have countries such as North Korea that blatantly invades and murders South Koreans, and they have no repercussions, and the UN does nothing. You've got Iran that sends their own people into other countries to help facilitate terrorist actions, but no one does anything. But yet the United States is the big bad bully. That one I don't understand.
Well, it's self-explanatory. William, glad you're back. Sorry, I don't know what happened. I guess we lost you. William, were you able to hear that piece, or did you get disconnected?
Oh, yeah,
before?
Yeah, I heard that piece. I've heard that before. Well, I keep up a lot with these things.
You want to go ahead and comment on that before I throw a rock through my window?
Hope it hits Rumsfeld in the head.
No, don't throw a rock through your window. Your window didn't do anything to you.
How is it that you always have
the thing
people?
Is...
Go ahead.
All right. The thing is, like, what disturbs me, because I understand why everybody's angry, right? And everybody's looking for somebody to blame. But you know what? When there's nobody to blame, and you have to blame yourself. I mean, because $9 trillion is an astronomical number. If there's not, I tried to explain it to a friend of mine. I was like, if you stacked all the bills in the world, that you make all the printed money in the world, you will not come up to a trillion. So for $9 trillion to be missing is beyond, it's not even a mystery. It's crime. It's a criminal act. You literally took this money from your population and distributed it to somebody else. The thing is you have to find out who is $9 trillion or who's richer without having anything. How do they do it with drug dealers? It's like, if a drug dealer lives in a poor area and he shows up with Mercedes limousines and all this high-class stuff, he becomes a suspect because why? We know in this area, and we know the average income of what everybody's making, you should not have this type of money. You should not have these type of things. You know, even though we're probably already dealing with rich people, $9 trillion is impossible to come up missing. Somebody who is a billionaire, just $1 billion, right, now has $3 billion. I guarantee you that. And have no way, and they have no way to account for it. But
now, what I
we're
find
not
going to
get any investigation like that. We're not going to get a single investigation like that. That's why I say we can no longer, we can point fingers at Rumsfeld, the U.S. Treasury or whatever, but the problem is somebody received that money. Might have been without a receipt, but somebody did receive that money, and you need some investigators to find out where this $9 trillion, who has it now? It's not, $9 trillion is not sitting in a vault somewhere, because there's no vault on earth that can hold $9 trillion. See what I'm saying?
What I question is, over what time period? That's another thing that they're not being specific about. Over what sort of a time period? This does not happen within a year, a month, or something like that. This is something that's occurred over a long period of time. So it's not just one individual, and they're going to turn around and blame a lot of it on accounting errors and this and that. But this is something that's occurred over a long period of time. So multiple people are involved in this. And
yeah.
The tape that you played was actually, like I said, from May of 2 years ago. So why hasn't there been an investigation or a call for an investigation over the last 2 years? We've been crying for an audit of the Fed for the last 5 years, and no one is auditing the Fed. There's no solid. What they did was a slight investigation, a little kiss on the butt. That's what they did. We need a full audit of the Fed.
Yeah, as we move to John for the next comment, my question, my comment is, Annie, maybe they don't want an audit, and maybe they don't want to find out exactly where the money went to. You know, it's kind of like a defense attorney won't call certain people to the witness stand because he doesn't want them talking. John, you want to go ahead?
Rule number one, yeah, but I will say rule number one is attorney never ask a question they do not know the answer to. So they already know the answer. They're not going to ask the question.
You want to go ahead and comment?
The problem is that we are in a fiat currency, and the money is not backed by anything, and the Federal Reserve has been printing out money over, say, like a 25-year period of time. We've been in a fiat currency. And as a result of the printing of this money, they printed enough money for all of the military spending. Who took the excess money were these military contractors like Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Halliburton. They took all of the extra money, and they dramatically increased their profits. And because they were cronies of Bush, they didn't have to open up like any type of accounting
to show how much money they were receiving in profits. So that's probably where the money went. It went to the military contractors.
Yeah, well, it went somewhere, and I don't think there's any question that, you know, the money went somewhere. That's the bottom line. It went somewhere. William, let me throw this question out to you guys. We'll go with William, Annie, and then John. At what point in time, since this interview took place in 2009, let's just for argument's sake say it started happening in say 2002. Okay, so we'll give it about a 10-year period. At what point in time does John, William, Cool Mike, and Annie grab our pitchforks and head down to Washington, D.C. and demand some answers? We're being treated as if we're peasants, and we the taxpayers are an inconvenience. You know, they're basically saying,
truth?
Look, we got money, F.O. William, go ahead.
Well, you know what the problem is that, and I hate to say this about us as Americans, we get once they bring the cameras or the press and all that, we get hung up in the spotlight, and we kind of like lose sight of what it was we were protesting about in the first place. And the reason why I say that, because our issue is fairly simple. I don't care if it was over the last 20 years. There is somebody in our government whose job it is to oversee this particular $9 trillion in every aspect of where this $9 trillion may be missing, right? There's somebody whose job is to investigate that, and there's somebody whose job is to tell said person to go and investigate. It's simple. We find out who that is. Problem is here in America, and I'm honestly starting to believe this, we rather take this fight and go, let's say we all go down to Barack Obama and sit out there and protest and allow the news to call us nuts. Or we'll take this fight to, the Speaker of the House and some other politician, maybe on the other side of the aisle, right? And once again, we'll show up on camera and we feel like we did something. We never take the fight or the protest to the people that's actually responsible. Somebody has a responsibility to look after this $9 trillion. I don't care if it was just a portion of it. It was somebody's job, because even if it's a portion, $1 billion might have came from one source, $500 billion might have came from another source, right? We need to find out who that was, go to their homes and protest there. We keep putting the pressure on, and that's why they keep getting away with it. That's why they keep getting away with it. I was telling a friend of mine, because they want to protest Monsanto, they wind up going to some congressperson and protesting that person. And I'm so like, you're supposed to be over at Monsanto. You see what I'm going to do? As soon as they pad his pocket, he's going to forget all about it. You might get some press time and you're going to walk away. No, this is somebody's job we're talking about. And their accountability is not there. So we have to go to the people that's responsible for overseeing money, large sums of money like this. Donald Rumsfeld said, $2.3 trillion was missing out of the Pentagon. We didn't go to Donald Rumsfeld and demand what happened to this $2.3 trillion. You're in charge of it, you know? And then even if we did, and he said, well, somebody else is in charge of it, then we go to that person. We have to find the person, trap the person, and get it out of them why it's missing. They can pass the buck until we find out, until we continue the investigation, until we find out the actual main person whose fault this is. And then we hold them responsible.
Amen. William, you crawled into my brain and were just giving a speech that was going right across my little telegraph in my brain. Annie, go ahead.
Oh, no, I agree with a lot of what he said. But my question is, there goes the background noise again. My question is that what happens if you end up protesting in wrong person, an innocent person's stoop. My question is that we have a problem. We can't get the investigation to find out who is responsible. Now, I know 2 years ago I was screaming, let's audit the Fed. And there's a whole mess of people behind me that have been doing the same thing. Let's audit the Fed. But we can't get to audit the Fed because Congress, the executive branch, won't let us do that. So where do we go from there? How do we? You can't camp out on the Fed chairman's doorstep because the second you do that, you're going to be arrested and thrown into jail and accused of about 1,000 different things. And 5 years later, you're walking out and the Fed's still not audited. So how do you do that without getting your butt set into jail for 5 years? That's the problem. Some of these people are so powerful that the moment you do try to do it, you're going to be thrown into a brick wall. So we've been trying to do it by trying to get our voices out, but mainstream media is not letting us get our voices out. How do you force mainstream media to do that? You're hitting your head against a brick wall.
Well, mainstream media is not really going to help us, but mainstream is on the side of...
But my question is, what's their answer to this? We're trying the best we can with what we got, and we're fighting as hard as we can with what we got. But does someone else have an answer beyond what we're trying? Tell me what the answer is. Tell me what we're doing wrong that our voices are not getting out there. Because we're trying like hell.
John, you want to go ahead and follow up?
Yeah, I fully agree with this comment that's in the chat room under this Mr. Spartan. The only thing that's holding this house of cards together is the fact that the dollar is the world's reserve currency. And that's like under the IMF as the world's reserve currency. Once the dollar is taken down, all of these imported goods that come into America are going to come in at an elevated price, and inflation is going to set in, and that's when the panic is going to set in. And you may see a situation where we're dealing like a situation like the French Revolution, when people just decided to storm the Bastille. So, it may turn out that way, because you'll have such a gap between the rich and the poor, and the rich will be isolated from the poor, and the poor will just rise up. So, you know, the only thing that's holding this whole thing together is that the dollar is a reserve currency at the IMF. Once that is taken down and another currency is put up there, all these imported goods from China and Japan and everything else, they're going to be at such an elevated price that the average American is not going to be able to pay for them.
Yeah, well, no doubt about it. And, John, I would have to agree with you that Mr. Spartan is extremely, extremely intelligent. As a matter of fact, I would go as far as to say he's probably been educated by at least the greatest high school in the planet. I'm not sure about the greatest college. But anyway, here's the bottom line. William, John, Annie, Cool Mike, anybody listening, why in the hell are we not doing exactly what William said? Who is responsible? This is, oh, my God. I almost think we as a people deserve all of this. We deserve complete implosion of our, we are so complacent. We have become so lost and confused in the political process of Democrats and Republicans, of the fact this person's black, he's white, he's Mexican or illegal, the union. We are so lost in the smoke that all these politicians and all these bureaucrats who are getting rich are throwing out there, that it's preventing us from seeing the real light. And the light is that we, the people, are still in charge. In charge. William, you want to go up and comment?
Yeah, I want to say this, response to Annie, right? Because she does have a point, right? Who do we go after? And I was just thinking, because I was thinking along the lines, is like, you know, you go to these people and they don't listen. She's like, you can get locked up for 5 years and then the media won't cover it. We need to go to the media. When you have, let's say, for example, Bill O'Reilly. If he won't cover your story, maybe you need to protest Bill O'Reilly to cover the story. You got to put pressure. See, the thing is, thing I know about people, there's always a weak link. Somebody is going to break. Somebody is going to talk, right? You know, the big debate about we had the big debate about waterboarding that took place, and that kind of hijacked the presidency, the last election, and enhanced interrogation techniques. You know, none of those are necessary. People are designed to talk, right? It takes discipline to keep your mouth shut, right? And guess what? Only a handful. Annie knows she used to be a cop. You know, we can't keep our mouth shut. You think Bill O'Reilly can keep his mouth shut? If you go, if you have thousands of people, because he won't do a piece on who's responsible for this, you think he's going to keep his mouth shut?
Yes,
you know,
they will.
If he can't go home, if he can't go see his wife, because everywhere he goes, people are following him, protesting him, because they want this story, he's going to break. And if he doesn't break, Fox News will break, or somebody at MSNBC will break, or somebody at CNN will break, or even some of the legislators or some of the people in Congress, they will break. You apply the pressure, they will break. That's what human beings do. That's why you cannot keep a secret. Our government can't keep a secret. Right? And everybody banks on that. Oh, our government can't. But they get mad when WikiLeaks comes out and leaks something, and then it's something terrible. You know, secrets are made to be exposed. That's why we keep secrets. Somebody is going to break. We have to keep finding those people. We have to keep going. If you think, the budget committee in Congress might have some answers, you go to them, protest them, right? But we need numbers. And that's the thing. You know what we really need? We need the people of America. We need our own lobby. Everybody has a lobby but us. Everybody
okay.
can buy a politician but us.
Okay. Okay. William, since I have already been there and done that, I have been fighting our local county council. And I'm telling you, it's not as easy as you think. You can hit the media as hard as you want, but if they have a higher agenda beyond your purpose, no matter what you say or do, it's not going to open that door, and it's not going to get the media to publicize. You can. I've tried other avenues, and again, it depends upon who's got the larger purse and what. And I'm sorry, the background noise is. But it depends upon who has the bigger agenda and who has the bigger purse strings. Because I'm telling you, we have been trying to fight our county council for something that they're trying to do stupid for $2.5 million. We've been doing this now for months on end. And again, as hard as we try to get the media to turn around and pay attention to us, as many times as I tried to contact people, and it's not just me, and I'm talking about a couple of hundred people, it depends upon who is backing the media and who has their attention and their agenda. And that's the whole big thing. What is their agenda, whether it's more important than your agenda? And sooner or later, like you said, you can eventually probably break through the wall. And we've been doing that. We've been chipping at it and chipping at it and chipping at it. And I'm telling you, this has been a fight that's been going on for at least 6 months. And I don't know if we've broken the wall down. I'll know next Monday when we go to the county council meeting. But it's not as easy as you make it seem. And I'm here on the forefront of the fight, not just on the local level with the county council. I'm there with the state level and the federal level. And I've been fighting on all fronts for all different types of battle. And I'm telling you right now, Cool Mike knows what I'm talking about. It's not something I take very lightly. It's something very difficult.
Hell no. Listen to you earlier talking about the flat tax. John, why don't you go ahead, 1 minute closing statement.
Also, yeah, I don't think that was said about, you know, the hard.
Hang on, John. I muted everybody's mic for a second. I believe at 11:30, I'm going to also be on another show. GGT, who is, I believe, in the room, we're going to, he has another, he's kind of new to Blog Talk. He has a great show. It's a conservative review. And if you missed it last night, Annie, double what your show was this afternoon. Last night was, it's almost like a nightclub, that opens the doors to anyone of all ages and from any background you can think of. So it is exciting. So definitely you want to join us. GGT, would you post a link, please, in the chat room? My keyboard's acting stupid, and I apologize for muting your mic. John, go ahead, closing statement.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be a situation where it's the hardworking versus the poor, because if you have a real economic breakdown, it'll be just everyone else versus the very elites in our society. When I say elites, I mean like people who are multimillionaires and above, because those will be the only people that will be holding most of the cash, whereas everyone else is going to suffer from a situation in which they're dealing with inflation and they don't have enough money to pay for anything. So if any of the poor are under any type of entitlement, basically all of that is going to break down.
Yeah. John, are you going to join us tonight for the other show?
Yeah, it's possible.
Well, please do. You know, I always enjoy your insight, and it's always a fun time. You know, I know you have various opinions. It's called the Conservative Prime Time with GGT 183, and tonight I guess you can add my name to the list there. But anyway, I'm going to send a link to this. Was yesterday's show. I don't know if he put a description up. Yes, I am co-hosting tonight. He sent me a private message, but this was a link to yesterday's show. John, hopefully you will join us tonight and take a look in the chat room. We got the link there. Thank you very much. William, my good friend. William, always a pleasure, and I hope you'll join us even tonight over at the other station. 60 seconds, closing statement.
Okay, 60 seconds.
Can take 2 minutes. You can have more than 60 seconds.
This directly, Annie. You know what I've learned?
Yes, sir.
You have to learn to love the fight. That's it. That's the answer. I understand what you're up against. I understand what we're up against. I understand the money they have, the resources they have, right? The thing is, in America, we are conditioned to love to win, but nobody wants to fight, right? As a police officer, I know you've seen the type of mentality where people that you have to lock up, they're always fighting. They love to fight. They love to fight, and they get what they want at some point because they just want to be in the mix, right? Then that's the mentality we have to have. We know that these people are powerful. We cannot just give up. We cannot just walk away. We cannot just say, oh, this is too hard. We have to, if you learn to love the fight, you will always be in the fight. And guess what? They don't like the fight. They want every. That's why there's $9 trillion missing, because somebody was too lazy to earn it. Go ahead.
Well, William, I really appreciate that. I really thank you. That is a good one. But if people know me, they know I live for the fight. And I may sound frustrated at times. It doesn't mean I'm giving up. I am too damn stubborn. I don't know if it's the Italian and German in me or it's simply because I was born here as an American. No one's going to get me to back down from a fight, and I'll tell you that. And I'm sure Mike knows that. He hears me on the air, and he hears the passion in my voice, and that ain't going away. And listen, I'm already AARP qualified and beyond, so if they haven't knocked the fight out of me now in all these years, they ain't going to knock it out me the day I'm still in a wheelchair or on a walker or whatever. I can be on a bedpan, and I'll still be damn fighting.
Well, I can, you know, and that's, Annie, I can attest to that. That's one of the reasons we actually said we got to get this fair tax in Michigan passed before South Carolina, because obviously you guys are on the ball. Anyway, thank you, Annie. Thank you, John. Thank you, William. It's a pleasure, as always. You can join us, I believe, at 11 or 11:30. I think GGT is still in the chat room, I believe. Nope, I guess he's not. But about 11:30, take a look at the link. I think we're going to have a show set up for 11:30 tonight, the Conservative Review. It's a good time. Thank you. I hope you guys will join us tomorrow, because tomorrow's show, we are going to talk about the media stars. and what they're reporting, the Sean Hannitys, the Rachel Maddows, the beautiful and absolutely wonderful people like Bill O'Reilly, Anderson Cooper. This is a show tomorrow you just don't want to miss. I even think Rachel Maddow may show a little cleavage in one of our videos. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very, very much. It's been a great show. We're gonna sign off right now. And in the process, remember, 11:30 tonight, the GGT show. Thank you. Tomorrow, 8 o'clock. Good night, everyone.